Welcome to the Aaron Bender Podcast. On this episode, Amanda Salas.
Having my parents in church with me would be when I get married, and then them watching the priest holding back tears, doing that with my like bald head and a head wrap over it. It was like, you don't forget those moments.
Everyone has a story. I get them to tell it. Welcome to the Aaron Bender Podcast. Conversations with media personalities about their personal and professional lives and journeys. Before we get to my conversation with Amanda Salas, a little about my story. I'm a widowed husband of two daughters who just lost their mom. A grieving husband, a man in recovery trying to reconnect with the world with fresh eyes, faith, and perspective, a college journalism professor, a white guy in a world of injustice, a 20-year broadcast media veteran who had his dream job and then lost it. Nearly 2 years ago, God gave me a gift, an opportunity to stop, step back, and breathe so I could learn about love, vulnerability, forgiveness, grace, self-care, patience, and understanding. Amanda Salas has been covering entertainment for more than a decade for Fox 11 in Los Angeles since 2017, and she is a champion, not just in the pun arena, but in her fight against cancer. You are on mute.
A year and 9 months of doing this, like, how embarrassing.
I did not realize how wrinkled my shirt appears, so give me 30 seconds. I will be right back.
Of course.
And this is all going in the podcast. It's just all
I love it. Stars are just like us. Podcast hosts. Hi.
And we've lost Amanda. Oh, there
she is. No, I'm here. Okay. I'm always here. I have like my little side here.
In the year and a half that you've been on Zoom, we're just going to jump right in. What was like either the most awkward experience? Because you're talking to celebrities who... they're not really connected to the real world anyway, you know? And then now all of a sudden you're like, okay, not only you're not going to be connected to the real world because you live in your own world, but now we're going to put you in front of this computer and we're just going to, you know, send you from Zoom room to Zoom room to Zoom room.
Yeah. I think one, I have a couple, because, you know, you're interviewing celebrities in their homes, and I'll never forget, I was interviewing Maya Rudolph for Hubie Halloween. And she had this big glass door or glass window behind her. And I could see her landscaper in the background blowing leaves or whatnot. And then I could hear it.
Yeah.
And I was just hoping that it wasn't going to be heard so much so in my interview, which it wasn't. It was great. And, you know, she probably has a great lawn.
Well, that's yes, absolutely. At that point, you just figure, okay, great lawn, very manicured. It's all good.
Absolutely.
Speaking of your celebrity interviews, you really, really hit one out of the park this summer with The Rock and the Pungal Cruise. I mean, that when you really connect with somebody, like I said, they're talking to 150 people a day for like 5 days straight. And then they go, you know, tour the country and tour the world promoting their movies. But you made an impact.
Thank you so much. I was looking forward to that one so much. So I appreciate you bringing that up. If you know the Jungle Cruise, you know it's packed full of puns. Yes. So if there was ever a junket to get the blessing to pun it up, it was that one. And to see him use my pun as a hashtag on his post, I think you're right, Aaron. I think summer made right there.
It's interesting because the kids, so I've got two daughters, we've got four cousins. So we had six kids watching that movie, and I don't know that it really connected with them. More the adults were laughing more than the kids because they're just not there yet.
Yeah, they don't get it. Like, I don't think they knew about the boulder pun for The Rock or taking things for granted. You know, you're right. Those are some bigger ones.
When did you start punning?
So my mom jokes actually that, because my mom's very punny, and so I get it from my mama. Yeah. She jokes that she had a pun in the oven with me.
Oh Lord. Oh, here we go.
Yeah. So okay. It's a generational thing right there.
When did little girl Amanda know? Did you grow up in Southern California?
I moved to California right after high school, went to college out here, and this is my home because I lived here the longest.
Yeah.
But I grew up, I was born in New York City and raised in Las Vegas. So, man, I know how to wear.
You're really hitting all the spots.
Seriously, I know how to wear sequins. I know how to take the subway, and I can sit in some traffic. So I feel like I've covered all my bases.
Why the move from New York City to Vegas? What are your memories in those two cities?
I have a very specific memory. My dad was in the casino industry, so that is why we moved to Las Vegas.
Okay.
And I have a very specific memory. It was the first night in Vegas, and my dad drove, and we flew a week later to meet him so he could set up things. And my mom looks at my brother and I and says, "What do you want for dinner?" And we're New York City kids. We want pizza because New York has some of the best pizza you could ever dream of. So we want pizza. And we're in Las Vegas where we're not in Kansas anymore. There's no Joe's Pizzeria or, you know, Enzo's Pizzeria that I was used to. So my mom found a close pizzeria to our home, our new home, and it was called Pistol Pete's Pizzeria.
Oh, no.
So you know that you're not a New York City kid anymore and you're a West Coast kid when your mom takes you to Pistol Pete's Pizzeria.
How old were you then?
9.
Looking back, did you welcome that move to Vegas? Was there some resentment as, you know, a 9, 10, 11-year-old? You're like, I've got some friends here in New York City. Why?
Yeah. I think all my dad had to say to us was, we're going to get a house with a pool. And I think we were in from then. Simple things, right?
We'll let the pizza slide. We'll let the dirty water hot dog slide.
Yeah.
We'll eat whatever you need. There's a pool in the backyard.
There's a pool in the backyard. You know, New York City is one of the best cities in the whole world. And I'm lucky to have been born there. I'm lucky to have two parents that are New Yorkers. But if my dad never made the move to Las Vegas, then I wouldn't be here in Los Angeles, and I wouldn't give that up for the world.
So why the move to Southern California?
Well, I knew that I wanted to either live in New York or California, and I wanted to be close to family. And so California was the right fit. It was coastal. It had culture. And when I came here, I just felt like this is going to be my new home. And people asked my dad, because I'm the only girl, they've asked my dad, are you nervous? Your daughter is moving to California? Doesn't know anybody? Are you scared for her? Are you nervous? And his response was, I'm scared for California.
Oh, God.
I'm nervous for California. So he knew I could take care of myself. I came out here alone. I didn't really know anybody. And this has been my home ever since.
Where did that bravado come from, that can-do-it attitude?
I think my dad, honestly. And my Mima, who's, you know, my best friend.
Yeah.
But my dad was always that fly free kid, do your thing, don't be scared. And that always stuck with me, but definitely my grandma as a single mother for, you know, most of my dad's childhood held it down. So I think definitely her.
And I ask that, you know, so you've got the puns from mom, you've got the can-do attitude, you moved here by yourself. You're not many broadcasters can say they started in print journalism, but tell me about that time at the Orange County Register.
I have.
We've got props.
I just had it somewhere. I just found I had my very first press pass. Oh, it was just here too, because I showed somebody on Zoom. But yes, I auditioned for a job at the Orange County Register. It was for their new web TV show called The Juice. It was a casting call, where anyone and everyone is welcome. So I show up and there's at least 300 girls there. And I remember I was number 286. And they gave me like a yellow number, very American Idol. This was an American Idol's heyday. So I think they were kind of going off of that model.
You're going to Anaheim.
Yeah, you're going to Anaheim. You're going to Santa Ana. Woo! And I had lived in Long Beach at the time. So I said, you know what? I'm 2 months away from graduating. Why not? So I drove down there and beautiful girls from all over LA and Orange County. They wanted to be the next Diane Sawyer or the next Maria Menounos, right? And so they said, okay, we want you guys to tell us about Christina Aguilera having a baby. And a lot of these girls gave a very standard delivery, you know, to each their own. And they were, you know, just said like, you know, Christina Aguilera just had a baby. And I said, I got to do something to stand out. I have to do something that's different. Yeah. So I went up there and it was my turn. They had seen so many candidates. And I said, pop star Christina Aguilera recently had a baby boy. Looks like this genie in a bottle is a genie with a bottle. And they like their heads went up and they looked at me and they go, what did you say? I said, she's a genie. You know that? And they're like, oh. And so that I have to thank a pun, because a pun was how I got my first journalism job. It was my first job in journalism.
When did you know that you wanted to go into journalism? And was it always entertainment or lifestyle? Was it always kind of the featurey side of journalism?
It was the featurey side, human interest. I took journalism all the way from when I was 14 years old. I went to a performing arts high school and I took journalism from freshman year to senior year. I had my own column in the high school newspaper. And I also hosted a show in college called What's Up Beach for Long Beach. Oh, and so I always knew that I loved being a storyteller.
So oh my
God. A storyteller with sass though, Aaron, a storyteller with a little sizzle.
Now, when you've talked about how, you know, you've got a lot of this personality from your mom. Has that personality ever kind of gotten you in trouble where it's like, okay, where's the line? Oh, Amanda just crossed it.
I'll tell you this. I was dating a guy at the time whose brother and best friends, they were all dating or marrying teachers. So we were at a wedding. We were all sitting at the table together. And they're talking about parent-teacher conferences. And they're talking about report cards and this and that and summer school. And I don't really have anything to add to that conversation. And so I just wanted to make friends. So I think I said something like, wow, did you see that Janet Jackson's nip slip resurfaced again and it's buzzing online? And my boyfriend at the time just kind of looked at me like they just kind of looked at me like, why would we know this? Why would we know this kind of lowbrow conversation for us? I'm like, okay, this isn't my crowd. It's fine. You know, to each their own. Again, I love celebrity news, entertainment news, Hollywood headlines. Not everyone does, and that's fine.
Why do you love it?
I have always loved it. I think I always remember watching the Oscars on television with my family. And it is that full circle moment where I said, I want to be there one day. And in 2014, when I covered the Oscars for the very first time, and I saw my feet on that red carpet, that specially made red carpet that they make, I think, in Georgia, they ship out to Hollywood. When I saw my feet on that carpet, it was a full circle moment for me.
Now, when I talk with my students at Cal State Northridge, many of them say, yes, I do want to go into entertainment reporting. What was, once you finally got, you know, to the Oscars, or once you finally got into the business, what was something that you're like, wow, I didn't know it was going to be like this?
It's not all glitz and glam. You know, and everyone thinks that it's the most glamorous side of journalism, which, yes, there is a lot of glamour involved, but there's a lot of hard work involved and you have to have a thick skin. And there are going to be times where you're told no, or someone's going to blow you off, or you're not going to get the same opportunity as someone else, and you're going to get competitive. And you really have to maintain an even keel, like a mentality about it, because there are days where I just want to slam my laptop down and scream because something is frustrating. And I'm keeping it 100 with you, like a publicist email or something, or getting disinvited from covering something. I mean, that's the side that you don't get to see all the time, but you have to wake up the next day and say, okay, it's like baseball. That pitch went out yesterday. It's a new day, new mound.
One of my reporter friends in Atlanta, Shanu Herr, who just started a new job in Iowa, he tweeted or put on Instagram, he's like, when are these reporters finding time to do TikToks? Because he's like, I have no time for any of the, where do you find the time? Because you are prolific.
In between my hits. I'm 20 minutes after the hour, every hour, catch me on the talk, 40 minutes past the hour.
Where do you find the time? The energy, really.
You know what? TikTok is funny. When the mood strikes you, that's the thing with TikTok. It's different than Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, where it's not this perfect pose. You don't have to be in full makeup. I did one last night where my hair was in a ponytail. I just had a sweater on and it struck me, and that's okay. It's a little more real and authentic to me. And you're guaranteed to get a giggle when you go on TikTok. So you make time for what matters to you. And I'm trying, shameless plug, trying to build that TikTok following.
What is it? Just Amanda Salas?
Yeah, I officially have my name, because the girl who had Amanda Salas wasn't on for over 5 years. So I was able to apply for it and I got it.
Okay. Yeah. She probably had it left over from when it was Musical.ly or whatever it was before
right,
that.
Right.
Yes.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
What is your favorite? Is TikTok your favorite platform? I mean, it's relatively new, but Is that your favorite platform because you feel like that's where you can be your most authentic self?
Yeah, I think right now it is. I also really like videos because you can't really Photoshop videos too much, you know, where people are Photoshopping and making these photos sometimes that they post a little too fake. And here's the thing that I say, and you have journalism students, don't Photoshop your photos too much. You want to touch it up a little, that's fine. But the jig's up if you're on the air live. You can't Photoshop your live shot, you know? So it is what it is, and you have to have an acceptance with yourself. Listen, I came back to work from medical leave after having cancer, and I was not used to seeing myself with really short hair. I always had long hair. And I just, ever since then, had this attitude like, this is me. You know, and in 10 years, 20 years, I'm going to look back and I'm going to say, why was I so hard on that person?
This is why we know that Amanda is a professional, because she knew I was going to eventually segue into your battle with cancer in 2019. We're talking just as Blood Cancer Awareness Month gets underway every September.
Yep.
So take me to 2019. You've been very vocal on your Instagram and you answer so many questions, so many requests, so many messages with, hey, how did you know that you had cancer? Because it was misdiagnosed several times until your, you know, final diagnosis, if you will. Take me through that.
Yeah. The one perk of being an on-air reporter was getting to see myself on camera. And I was starting to see my face become more and more swollen, and my body become thinner and thinner, and they weren't matching up. And I was going through some personal life problems, breakup. And I thought, maybe I'm losing weight because of that.
Right.
Because that happens. But why is my face getting swollen? And I would see it getting, like, you know, more and more swollen. And I would ask some of my friends, and most people don't want to say yes. So they would say, no, you look fine, or whatever. So one friend did say, did you just get dental work? And I said, no. Or did you get filler?
Oh, and in interesting. LA, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And I said, no. So long story short, because it is a long story. I went to a Toy Story junket and I was interviewing Tom Hanks and Tim Allen, and it's a Pixar movie. And I was sitting in the waiting room and I was looking around at the Pixar posters, and I said, I'm starting to look like a Pixar character, a big head and a skinny body.
Oh.
And I watched the footage from that junket and I saw my face and I said, no, something is wrong. That it is too swollen. So I went to doctor after doctor and I was told, it's allergies. You're not getting enough sleep. I even had a doctor tell me that. And I asked, so not getting enough sleep makes your face swell up like this? And he goes, you're a reporter, Google it. Of course it does.
Wow. Yep. Wow.
He was one of my first calls when I got out of the hospital.
Oh, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, we'll get to that. eczema. Any other, like, don't sleep with your dog for a few days. See if it's your pet allergy. I changed my detergent. I had my hands on my face at work. I was so upset because I felt, like, hopeless. And I was so uncomfortable because I was getting, like, an itch and my face was swelling up and my body was losing weight. And a coworker walked by and said, what's wrong? And I told her, and she gave me her holistic doctor's info. She goes, listen, he doesn't take insurance. You have to pay out of your pocket, but he's worth it.
Yeah.
I said, at this point, that's fine. It was $400 to go see this doctor. as women, we've spent that on purses or jeans or shoes, whatever.
Right. I said, fine. Right. And that's a lot less than one of the doctor's visits that you went to, like traditional Western medicine, if you will.
Yeah.
And yeah, maybe the copay is only $20, right. But the insurance is going to pay like, $1,000 or whatever.
Exactly. Trust. I learned about all that reading those medical bills.
Yeah.
So he did all the other tests that the other doctors did. The only difference is he said, you know what, even though your thyroid levels are fine, I want you to go and get a thyroid ultrasound. And I said, okay. At this point, if he told me to stand on my head, I would do whatever he said. I go, any place in particular? He goes, no, you can go anywhere. So I called the place near my house. Yeah. They said, sorry, we can't see you for another week, but we do have an opening at our Glendale location. Aaron, Glendale's not near my house. It's not near my job. But I said, you know what? I'll go. They go, we have an availability tomorrow. I'm going.
Yeah.
So I went. And that was the day that I found out that I had cancer, because when they did the thyroid ultrasound, they found a mass.
Oh, wow.
And told me I had to go to the ER.
Wow. Oh, just leave here, go now.
Well, because of so many rules, they first did the ultrasound, asked me to go back in the waiting room, then come back in. Then they did it again, a little bit lower this time. And I knew something was wrong, that they were doing it twice. Yeah. They hand you an envelope and they say, you have to go to the hospital. And I said, why? And they go, we can't tell you.
What?
And I said, I'm sorry. I'm going to need to know why. I need to go to the hospital, please. I'm getting very emotional. Open the envelope and highlight it. It says numbers, like the measurement of mass detected. And you're just, everything just stops for a second. And you think, maybe it's just fatty tumor or this or that. Because everything goes in slow motion. And people who get this diagnosis know that the world literally just stops around you. And you're just stuck with that news for, you're still stuck with it. It never goes away. It just, there are times where you don't think about it as much. But and then I don't know what those measurements are. That's like somebody saying sometimes, go south on this street, left or right?
Right.
Which way?
Right, right.
So when they give you the measurements, I asked the doctor, how big is that, like a golf ball? And he said, bigger. And I go, like a grapefruit? And you know you're in LA when he says, like an organic grapefruit.
Oh my gosh. Come on.
Because they're smaller.
Yes.
I get that, actually. Yeah.
My gosh.
And then they do the biopsy to confirm, even though they have a feeling because of the other symptoms. And the biopsy confirmed that I had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, a blood cancer. That blood test didn't detect. The irony, huh?
I don't understand how a blood test doesn't pick that up. I mean, I do get, especially with what my wife went through with all the different blood tests and things, that, you know, they have to test for specific markers. And it's not just like, okay, blood test checks for everything.
Right.
But how do they miss that?
And my oncologist, my hematologist, told me that actually my blood test didn't have the marker that said I had cancer, which is crazy to me. This is a blood cancer. This is why it's so important that we donate to research that is helping us track and find out and detect cancer. It's the only way most blood cancer patients discover they have cancer is a scan, an X-ray, something that gets inside and shows the cancer.
So what I'm and this is my ignorance here. You know, when I think blood cancer, I think, okay, there's no tumor anywhere. It's just, okay, there's floating around the blood, but you had a mass. So where's all that kind of fit in?
Yeah. I had a tumor and it was lymphoma, which is a blood cancer. The cells mutated and it's the cancer of the lymph nodes. And I know, I still have to think of it. I had to Google what lymphoma was when they told me what it was, because what does the average person know what lymphoma is?
Yeah, we hear about it, but I don't know. Yeah. And until my wife had cancer, I had no idea what lymphedema was, lymphoma. Right. Yeah.
No, you don't know. And so I Googled it. And then the worst thing is when you ask them what caused it and they say, they don't know.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
If you have lung cancer and you're a smoker, you can deduct that that's probably why. Right. Liver cancer and you're a drinker, okay, maybe that's probably why. Nothing. They call it the bad luck cancer. It's just, you just get bad luck and get it.
Did you immediately dive into Google, or did at some point you say, you know what, I, it's not that I don't want to know, but I'm just overwhelmed. I need to take a day or a two or a week.
Yeah. Yes. When you find out, oh, Michael C. Hall beat lymphoma. Yay. On Google. Oh, Jackie O passed away from lymphoma. No more Google for today. Yeah. It's right. Yeah, definitely. But honestly, Instagram, social media helped me because I was in the hospital for almost 3 weeks. Not much to do, hooked up to cords because I had to start chemo right away.
Quick question about that before you go on. Yeah. So when you left that ultrasound in Glendale and went straight to the hospital, you were there for 3 weeks or you had to wait?
Yeah, I didn't leave. Oh, I actually had my work clothes hanging in the back seat in a paid parking lot, by the way. So I had to have my family move my car and they made a special circumstance for me because I was in the hospital and the car was sitting there for days.
Right.
Yes, they told me to go to the hospital. I told my boss I was going to be late because the appointment, then it ran over. I said, I'm going to be even more late. Then I called her back in tears and said, I can't come in today. I have to go to the ER. And I actually texted one of my producers and said, I don't think I'm coming to work tomorrow. You might have to get someone else to do this segment.
Yeah.
She goes, okay, everything okay? I'm like, I'm in the ER right now. I'll keep you posted. And I was there for 3 weeks because I had to start chemo right away because going back to the swollen face, the tumor was pressing on my blood vessels and the oxygen wasn't getting to where it needed to be. I could have had a stroke because it would have cut off my oxygen. So I'm glad that they detected it, discovered it when it did. I believe in angels and I think I had a guardian angel.
Tell me about those 3 weeks because like, I hate to say this like this or ask this. I mean, did you have plans other than work where you're like, hey, I'm supposed to be in, you know, Palm Springs this weekend or.
Well, yeah, I was going to go to Hawaii and cover the Hobbs and Shaw junket. I had just gotten back from Orlando for the Toy Story. I needed to finish cutting that. I had things that I was working on and they're like, no, you need to stay here and get treatment. I was checked into the hospital on a Monday, Aaron. I started chemo on a Thursday. The biopsy was Tuesday.
Wow.
Then they order the chemo and they have to try to put a port in you because there's only certain places you can get chemo.
Yep.
They weren't able to get the port the first time.
Oh God.
I had to go through my arm.
And it's such a painful, I mean, I know you have a portocath scar now. Yep. So they were eventually able to, yeah.
Yeah. The second time at City of Hope, when I transferred to City of Hope, they were able to get, cause the first round of chemo shrunk the mass enough that they were able to get the port in the second time. And then I was able to get chemo right through there instead of through a PICC line in my arm.
How many lymph nodes did they end up taking out?
They didn't take out any lymph nodes.
Really?
Yeah. I mean.
Wow.
This is, when you have a doctor say to you, if it is cancerous, we'll start you on, you do chemo and, you know, you have 6 rounds of chemo, 24-hour a day chemo for 5 days in a row. If it's not cancer, then we have to cut you open from here to here, take the mass out, and then you'd still have to go for some radiation. And then follows it with, so actually it's probably better if it is cancer. What?
Oh no, wow.
What? Did you just say that to me? And he's like, cause you know, then you'd have a scar right here. And you think I'm worried about scars, man? I'm 34 years old and you just told me I have cancer. I want to live. That's the main thing I want.
Yeah. Yeah. Scars so, be damned. Right.
Yeah. So luckily, and I feel blessed to say that the only surgery I had to have was the port, getting the port in and getting the port out.
So beyond those 3 weeks, what did they tell you was going to be next? What was the prognosis? Yeah. And what was your mindset going into it?
So the first round of treatment, I had to stay in the hospital. And then they said, for round two, we're going to give you a chemo pack and you're going to be able to be home with your chemo. Again, I'm like, okay, what? Yeah, a chemo fan. You wear it like a fanny pack and it connects and you get your chemo. It's automated. It knows how much chemo to give you. Like the Rock fanny pack? Yeah, you just tie it around. They weren't kidding.
Yeah.
Rounds 2 through 6, I had an actual black fanny pack. It had a bag of chemo, red bag inside of it. And it was giving me about a tequila shot glass of chemo every hour for 24 hours a day. I had to sleep with it. I had to shower with it.
Yep.
I went out, hung out with friends with it. I was in church with it. It made a little bit of noise, but not too much. And I actually, it was a luxury that I was able to get my chemo while I was at home.
For how long?
I still can't believe that when I say that, yeah. Honestly. Like, this is like, it's the magic of medicine, but I was able to still enjoy life while fighting a life-threatening disease.
You bring up church, you bring up going to church. Tell me about your faith before this, during this, and since.
I grew up Catholic, went to Catholic school most of my childhood, and then went to performing arts high school. And I received, you know, communion, baptism, confirmation. And I thought that the next sacrament that I would receive would be marriage, but it was anointing of the sick. Mm-hmm. And I went into church one day with my family. We're all Catholic. And we waited after Mass was over and we asked the priest if he would do the anointing of the sick on me. And, you know, seeing my parents in church, like I was thinking, having my parents in church with me would be when I get married, and then them watching the priest holding back tears, doing that with my like bald head and a head wrap over it. It was like, you don't forget those moments. And so, but I honestly, like, they tell me all the time, you need to thank God. My grandma still has a religious candle on the counter and she keeps it lit all the time. One time my mom blew it out. My grandma goes, "What are you doing? That's Amanda's candle. You can't do that."
What did you do to her?
Yeah, she goes, "Light it back, light it back." So she's told me, "I keep this lit at all times for you." So yes, and they tell me you need to donate to that church every year because that priest, you know, and yeah. I think my faith absolutely was heightened during and after. And I do feel, and my friend who, you know, Maria Quivon, she just texted me yesterday saying, like, this was your calling. And it's crazy to think that, because I never would have thought that. But in a way, she's right.
All that just took me back.
I know. You know, because you know that cancer affects more than just the person going through treatment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So obviously you didn't lose your faith during this whole process. It just made it stronger. But
you lost my hair, not my faith.
You did lose your hair. That's where I was going with that.
Yeah. All of it. Uh-huh.
Look at just a couple of reporters trying to figure out how we're going to segue and tease. That's great.
Look at us. Yeah. Lost my hair, not my faith. I lost every follicle. Eyebrows, eyelashes, even little tiny like peach fuzz on your cheek. All of it.
Did you know how much of your identity or your being was your hair prior to losing it?
Not prior to losing it. I just always had long hair, you know, and I loved it. And people would say, "Oh, your hair's your thing. Your hair's your thing." Well, what do I do now that I'm bald?
Got no thing.
Yeah. My dad called me Persis from Star Trek, you know, and
oh no.
I started having a new appreciation for Sinead O'Connor.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then you just learn that your hair is not your thing. It's one of the things that makes you you, but it's not your thing. Surviving became my thing. Yeah. And I really hated wigs. I really hated wigs. I never felt like it made me appreciate my hair before, because I was like, wow, my real hair was so much better than this wig. But it didn't feel like me when I'd wear the wigs. Like, they were fun once in a while, but I honestly rocked my bald head with a hat to protect it from the sun. And most of the time I just went follicle free.
Yeah. One of your most recent TikToks is showing off your massive collection of headbands.
Massive. You have to in the mullet stage. You go through the mullet phase and survivors know this. And your hair is like longer in the back and shorter up here, and you need something to buffer it. And a headband goes a long way.
I was really anxious about really anxious about that part of our conversation.
Yeah.
It's going to be like two episodes in a row where I just lose it.
You know what? This is a human moment, and I really appreciate you being so open with me and letting me share my story and letting me hear parts of your story.
How did you handle, as I deflect from me, how did you handle all the messages that were coming in? Because just like when you Google, it can be overwhelming.
Yeah.
And I know you try to answer every message that comes in, whether it's a survivor or a family member or just a viewer who wants to support you.
Yeah. I feel like in this, I just feel like sometimes I have a calling to go on at certain times and I'll see these gem messages. I met a woman who's a mom of a boy who was 19 and had lymphoma, and we're still friends. Her name is Vanessa. You know, there was a viewer recently this week who shared that her goddaughter passed away from leukemia at 9 years old. I don't go on the message requests every day, but when I do, I tend to find at least one or two that I feel a need to respond to and to connect with. But you're right. You know, getting back to work, fundraising for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, having a personal life, being a dog mom, you know, getting to the gym, cooking, dinner, going grocery shopping. I'm trying to balance it all. And I've given myself a little bit of grace where I say, I don't need to reply to every message. I have to do what's best for me emotionally and mentally. And sometimes I can't spend hours on social media. I have to take a break. And I apologize. Some people are upset if I don't respond to their message. And I genuinely didn't see it, or just, it's nothing personal, you know, but I have to make it personal for me and do what's best for me. After this podcast with you, I'm going to the gym. And I have my training session that I have to do, because it's the one thing that we can control. A friend told me, John Cena said, control the controllable. Now, I couldn't control getting that diagnosis, but I can control keeping a healthy body, keeping a healthy mind. I can do my best to control that.
I don't know if there's maybe a day that you can pinpoint where you felt like, oh, okay, I'm back. Or I'm, quote, back to normal, if that can ever really be achieved.
Physically, I don't think I'll ever be back. I'll always have this reminder, you know, you're never back. You just get a version of yourself that is familiar again. Like seeing my hair grow in, which it is curlier
it's
this
great.
Time.
Yeah.
Thank you. Because it's newer and, you know, fresher, like little baby tendrils. But, I competed in an international pun competition, and people had always talked about chemo brain and your foggy brain.
Yep.
And I was worried. I thought, oh my God, if I can't pun anymore, terrible. So I competed in this pun competition and I got all the way to the finals, and I was competing with a lovely gent from across the pond, and I won. And that was a day that I said, I got a version of myself back. I was able to hold my own and go all the way with my brain. Your body will ebbs and flows. You know, you'll gain weight, you'll lose weight. We were in a, following cancer was a pandemic. So I say I went through a candemic, you know, I don't feel like I got back to any kind of normal, because we're not in any normal right now, but getting to do what I love to do and having my mind sharp, that was the best.
Did you feel at any point, that you wouldn't get through this? And how did you counter that, balance that?
I was lucky enough to have such a loving support system that they didn't let me feel like there was any other option. After my fifth round of chemo, I remember sitting at the dining room table crying to my mom, because this is how I have to break it down to people who have never gone through it to understand. Each round of chemo is like an iPhone battery. You lose 10%. You lose 10%. You lose 10%. You're on low battery. So I was like on 10%. And I told my mom after the fifth round, I said, and you have to do all the rounds, the doctor says.
Yeah.
I said, Mom, I don't know. I don't know if I can do this again. I don't know if I can go through another 5 days, 24/7 chemo. I got nothing left. It took my color of my skin. It made my nails black, took my hair. It gave me mouth sores and ulcers. My knees would give out sometimes if I was walking. And I said, Mom, I don't know if I can do it. And my grandma heard me and goes, you will do it. It's not a matter of if you can. You will do it. You are going to do it. And you're going to look back and be glad you did it. And seeing my, at the time, 84-year-old grandmother give me that stern talking to was everything. You know, you have such a devoted grandma who looks at you in the hospital and says, why you? Why not me? I've had my day in the sun. Why you? It should have been me. I wish I could take your cancer away from you. So I you don't just do it for yourself. As you know, you do it for your loved ones. You do it for, I did it for me, Ma. You know, you do it for everyone who's rooting for you. And you want to ring that bell.
Oh, yeah, the bell.
You got to ring that bell.
So many different questions and directions we could go. And I appreciate your time. I know we're going a little bit over. When you feel something now, like some joint pain or the, does that take you back to 2019 before you were diagnosed and you're like, oh shit, what is this now?
I just want to say that you're asking all the right questions. And I know that I'm talking to somebody who gets it. So I want to say thank you for that. Because these are, I get asked a lot of questions, but these are very good questions and they're very relatable. And you do. And I actually brought it up to my oncologist. I said, I've been a little itchy because itch was one of my symptoms. I've been a little itchy on my legs or my feet. And he says, sometimes when the body goes through trauma and something reminds you or triggers that trauma, your body lets off a chemical and you panic. And actually, it makes it worse. So if you try to like say, you know what? Yeah, my leg is itchy, but I know it's not that itch.
Yeah.
Because I remember what that itch felt like. And it's not that. And try to calm yourself. He goes, I think you'll feel better. He goes, because you know, you're coming in for your checkups. And I always say, I think I need a scan. My face is puffy today. I need a scan. I need a scan. And he's like, you don't need a scan. We're not going to just scan you because he's like, you know, it's not good to get too many scans. Speaking of, I have a scan coming up. It's my 2-year scan. And he said, when, I'm not going to say if, when that scan comes back clean, no more scans. You know, scans, he said, Dr. Herrera, should be the last resort because you're exposed to a lot of radiation with those scans.
Yeah.
And I trust him. And so, yeah, you do. You do, you know, I'm conscious now. I always look in the mirror and I had a viewer write me a message and say, are you okay? Your face looks a little swollen. I'm like, it's fine, Rosemary. I'm just gaining a little weight.
Yeah, because now you can't even, there's no fluctuation. There's no anything.
No, I'm like, just the pandemics. Don't worry about me. I'm okay. Just gained a couple LBs.
Oh,
but,
so good.
As long as people say hot girl summer, and I'm just like, you know what? Just give me a healthy girl summer. That's really what's important.
Tell me about the conversation you had. Two conversations. Mm-hmm. One with the holistic doctor and another, and then the other with that guy who said, you're a reporter, just go Google it.
Oh, yeah. My first call, I had so many missed calls and texts. My first call, maybe it's the Latina in me. I was like, oh no, I was spicy. My first call was to that doctor who told me to Google it. And I called and I asked to speak to the office manager. And I said, I came in on this date and this doctor named him, told me it was because I wasn't getting enough sleep and that I should Google it because I'm a reporter. Well, I would like to let him know that he is a doctor. And those are very common symptoms of lymphoma, which I have, and just had my first round of chemo. The first thing she says to me is, I'm so sorry. We'll go ahead and refund you your $25 copay.
I said,
you know what? Don't even worry about refunding me my $25 copay. Please just write down and laminate my symptoms and hand them to that doctor so that he knows from now on, if someone complains about this, 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 and this, it could potentially be lymphoma.
Yeah.
And another doctor from that the office practice called me to apologize and told me that if I would have gone to him, he is familiar with those symptoms. Well, coulda, shoulda, woulda. Coulda, wow. Shoulda, woulda. But the man who saved my life by giving me that ultrasound order was Dr. Jace from the Medical Arts in North Hollywood on Magnolia. And he is the one who I called and thanked for saving me. And he does like a lot of the herbs and a lot of the holistic approach to medicine. But he's the one who wrote the order. I also went and gave a bottle of wine and flowers to the woman who did the ultrasound because she caught it. And she said, I saw your story on the news. And I pointed and said, I discovered that. And we became Facebook friends and Instagram friends, but I had to bring her a gift and just thank her. There's no gift, and Hallmark doesn't make a card that says, thanks for detecting my tumor.
They should.
It's not a bad idea, Hallmark or Papyrus. It's not a bad idea. But there really is no gift that you can give to thank someone enough, but I had to do something. But I want to give you a shout out. You were very supportive to me and I appreciate all your messages. And I guess I found your message at the right time because I had missed some of your other messages to me. And when Maria, our friend Maria, who I work with, told me about you, she had the nicest things to say about you. And she shared your story with me. And I'm just so glad that the universe aligned for us to meet and for us to talk.
Yeah. And that's where I file almost everything now that happens in life. It's like, oh no, that's God's timing. That's God's timing. Because if you and I had talked in 2019, when I was doing another podcast, this conversation would not have been nearly as meaningful because while my wife did by that point, go through the double mastectomy, go through the chemo and go through the radiation. It was nothing like last year. When we learned it had come back and that's, which is how I know about the blood markers and the different things like that. And, you know, you just kind of become an expert in a lot of these things that it's like, I mean, did at any point you feel like, okay, I'm going to kind of leave entertainment behind because now I'm kind of a health expert and I want to report on a lot of these things that I've experienced and
I'm
want
so
to
blessed.
Shine a light.
Well, I'm so blessed that my job, Good Day LA and Fox 11 have not only supported, but have helped facilitate so many great ways for me to do both. So for Blood Cancer Awareness Month, they're letting me have my oncologist on. They're letting me do a City of Hope story. I'm highlighting Leukemia Lymphoma Society. I get to do both because both are so near and dear to my heart. And when people say, oh, my job's so supportive, my job was there. My boss at the time came to the hospital when I was there. They showed up for me at Light the Night. And so it's great when you don't have to choose and I can use the platform I already had and add another layer to it. And also, you know, talk about Mark Hoppus, who's fighting lymphoma right now, and Jeff Bridges, and bring that into the conversation and say, and I know what they're going through because of X, Y, and Z. So it just adds that personal note to it and get to do both.
Amanda, thank you for this. I really appreciate it. And I appreciate you and your strength, your vulnerability, and, you know, just your light. Thank you.
Well, I want to thank you. And as sorry as I am for your loss, I'm grateful that you're taking your pain and the grief and using it to help highlight awareness. And so I think that you have a beautiful soul. And I just wish I could give you the biggest hug along with all of my condolences. One day we're going to find a cure so that nobody has to go through that kind of pain.
Thank you, Amanda. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
That was good.
I just wish I could hug you.
Just big hugs. Big hugs.
This is like such a huggable moment.
You can watch this episode on YouTube and DBNA TV, also IGTV. Follow the Aaron Bender podcast on your favorite platforms and link to it at aaronbender.com. That's where you can find my social media as well. If you have guest ideas or comments, email me, aaronbendermedia@gmail.com.
Be well, and thanks for listening.